Chapter 16. Some Explaining to Do. Towers rose in the distance, seen above the rooftops of the small buildings that had been built outside the city walls. Cadrus had outgrown its wall long ago, and the empire was secure enough that the populace felt safe just being within sight of it. The buildings outside were a diverse assortment of small shops, inns, and dwellings. As the city expanded as a trading hub, the need for more places to put the vast number of visitors outstripped the ability of the old city to provide. Brannis could make out the Imperial Academy, various noble houses, the largest among the watchtowers, and the Tower of Contemplation, attached to the Imperial Palace. Iridan had told them they needed to report there first, the morning after returning to the inn, where the rest of their small band had actually gotten a night's sleep. Brannis was a little worried about what he had been up all night discussing with the sorcerers back home, but trusted that Iridan had not cast him in too bad a light. On horseback, they had little trouble making their way down the main thoroughfare of the outer city, as folks generally had the good sense to clear a path for a dozen horses to pass. Had they been on foot, the crowds would have made it difficult for them all to remain together. Men and women of various kingdoms were in abundance, though still outnumbered tenfold by local cadrans. While much of the empire was segregated by choice to either native-born cadrans or conquered peoples, with a fair number of loyal cadran soldiers garrisoned among them. In a given city, the capital itself was quite metropolitan by comparison. The architecture of the outer city was especially worldly, with much of the more modern expansion coming via the developing trade with lands across the seas. Folk who had little historical reason to distrust Cadran, unlike many of their continental neighbors, most of whom either warred with Cadran or had been conquered by them sometime in the past few hundred winters. Brannis rode at the head of the group, followed by Iridan and Sir Lugrin. Rashan rode in the middle of the conscripts, not wanting to draw undue attention to himself quite yet. The city gates stood wide open, and as a sign of Cadran power, were never closed. So certain was the city of its defenses. There was, however, a token force of guards at the gate, and on this particular occasion, a herald.
"Hold and be recognized," came the herald's shout as they approached.
Brannis drew up just short of the guards and their brandished halberds.
"This is apparently going to be a formal affair," Brannis mused.
The herald was dressed in white finery, with a pinched face and sporting long blonde hair and tiny spectacles, giving the impression of a white mouse that had learned to read. He carried a scroll held open before him.
"I am Sir Brannis Solaran, commander of the 8th Battalion, returning from investigating Kelvi Forest," Brannis replied.
"I am Sir Lugrin Malkia, serving under Sir Brannis."
Lugrin's reply was the most he had spoken in a week.
"I am Iridan Corian, 4th Circle," Iridan said.
"I am Todd Hellet," Todd began, but the herald cut him off with a dismissive wave of his hand.
"Sir Brannis, Sorcerer Iridan, you are hereby ordered to accompany me to the Tower of Contemplation and to answer the questions of the Inner Circle. Sir Lugrin and the rest of you, please dismount and accompany these guards to the Imperial Army Command," the herald said matter-of-factly, and then closed the scroll.
"No."
"What was that?"
the herald demanded. He carried orders directly from the Inner Circle, and no doubt was aghast at having been contradicted.
"I am Rashan Solaran," a voice from the middle of the pack said evenly, and a horse rode to the front.
"Warlock of the Empire, High Sorcerer, and the blood-stained right hand of the Emperor. I will see the Inner Circle, and I will take orders from none but the Emperor himself." Rashan stopped his horse just short of the herald. The tidy, fussy man who had initially been outraged was now petrified with fear. Unarmed and dressed in poorly made clothes, Rashan's presence was still unnerving.
"Do you understand?"
Yes, came the meek reply.
Brannis wondered whether some magic was at work to so cow the man, or if he was just familiar enough with the busts decorating the academy and the Tower of Contemplation that he was familiar with the face of the warlock.
"Am I the only one who is not convinced?" Brannis wondered,
Rashan had left orders and made the herald confirm them with the Circle's borrowed authority that the soldiers and Sir Lugrin would be taken instead to the Harp and Lute, a rather pricey inn that had been in business since his own time. The herald had a horse tied nearby, and the four of them, Rashan, Brannis, Iridan, and the herald himself, rode across the city in silence. Three of them seemed worried. The streets were crowded, but the path before them always seemed open. Slightly suspicious, Iridan focused on the ether for a moment and saw why. Rashan was using magic to gently push aside anyone who came near to getting in their way.
Kemu Nantalo Chanisi Kwega,
Iridan muttered, and touched the index finger of each hand to the palm of the other.
What are you doing?
Iridan spoke telepathically to Rashan.
Making this into a procession, came the reply.
You are going to start trouble. Please stop.
I am drawing attention, but there will be no trouble. I want people to know I have returned. When the rumors begin, I want plenty to have borne witness.
And with that, the communication was cut short. Iridan was not sure how Rashan had managed that. But if he wanted to contact the old demon again, he would have to work the spell a second time. When they arrived at the tower, the herald led them around to the side entrance. There were two main entries to the Tower of Contemplation, one through the palace itself, and the other was the way they were taking. The tower was a masterpiece of magical architecture. Like the rest of the palace, it was built of Gelkan marble, mostly black with highlights of green streaked through it. The whole of the palace was also accented with filigree and statuary, and silver-capped towers of smaller height. The Tower of Contemplation was carved with runes of old protective spells, shielding the sorcerers of the Imperial Circle from enemies of magical power both near and far. The runes could turn aside mighty spells and prevent spying. As they dismounted and allowed stable boys to take the reins of their horses, Brannis could not help but wonder anew at its beauty. He was born and raised in Cadrus, but he spent much time away. It was easy to forget how wondrous the capital could appear. Iridan also could not help but take in the sight of his order's seat of power, having only been up close a few times and only inside even fewer. The Circle's herald barely gave the tower a second glance, having just come from it earlier in the day, and having been in and out of it a dozen times a week for many long summers. Rashan, however, stopped entirely. He looked up, and his gaze swept each balcony, each carved gargoyle, every rune, and all the greenish swirls of the exotic marble. Brannis thought he might be harboring second thoughts about bullying his way in to see the inner circle, but Iridan thought he seemed more wistful. When they finally did enter, the guards did not budge to challenge them. Brannis suspected, though he had no way to look into the ether to tell, that their overly stiff posture was due to Rashan holding them at their posts by magical means. A sweeping set of stairs circled almost endlessly upward around the circumference of the main chamber of the tower, the ceiling of which was obscured in shadow over 100 feet above them. Rashan took the lead, marching straight for the middle of the room. Brannis and Iridan followed. The herald remained behind as the three of them began to rise on a platform that formed itself beneath them out of nothing but ether. While Rashan had been the one to activate it, it was not his magic that was at work. It was an accommodation for the many elders among the circle, for whom the number of stairs was daunting, if not entirely impossible. The levitation platforms let the older sorcerers attend circle meetings without needing their own magic to ascend the stairs. It was in very poor taste for young, able-bodied sorcerers of the third circle and below to use them. As they gently ascended, Iridan leaned close to Rashan.
Do you think you might have changed clothes? You do not quite look the part at the moment, he whispered to the purported warlock.
I am just hoping he does not decide to kill them all, Brannis muttered under his breath. He panicked, though, as Rashan chuckled. He had not actually intended to speak that aloud. Rashan did not answer either of them, however, and kept to himself as they rose. As the platform made its way up toward the topmost levels of the tower, they drew curious stares from those on the landings and on the stairs who were going about their daily business in service to the circle. Clerks and scribes, messengers and sorcerers all bustled about, entering and leaving the various chambers and corridors that branched off from the landings at each level. The sight of the three travelers was extraordinary enough that much work was interrupted to gossip about the unusual visitors. Brannis had not really stopped to think about it at first, but Rashan's shabby attire was probably low among their interests. Here Brannis was, still dusty from the road, armored and bearing a magical weapon. It was the last that he regretted. Had the Herald not been so disconcerted by Rashan's bullying, he likely would have disarmed Brannis, or at least required him to leave the sword below. Brannis fingered the dragon-sculpted hilt of Massacre and wondered if he might be able to leave it with the guards who would be stationed outside the inner circle's sanctum. Brannis's musings did not have long to fester and gnaw at him with worry. If the inner circle was going to feel threatened by his sword, so be it, because as soon as they reached the top of the inner chamber of the tower, Rashan strode off. There was naught else at the landing but a short corridor leading to the stairs up to the sanctum. A pair of Imperial guards flanked the bottom of the stairs. Each wielded a weapon like a trident, with the center tine greatly shorter than the outer two. Neither of them so much as flinched as the three approached, and even Brannis had caught on as to why. I suppose they would not do much good taking custody of it anyway, Brannis reflected, consciously removing his hand from the hilt of Massacre and assuming a normal gait. The stairs led up into the sanctum proper. They emerged at the lower circle, a great ornate chamber with a floor inlaid with runes of protection, both from physical harm and from more subtle invasions against the privacy of the proceedings. Around the walls of the chamber were portraits and busts, showing past high sorcerers, set into shallow alcoves in the stone. Iridan could feel the faint hum of harnessed ether, both from the room's wards as well as from the members of the inner circle and the various protections they carried. The sanctum had a mezzanine level all around. A complete circle was formed of 12 seats behind a chest-high wall, with stone desks hidden from view below. Those seats held the 12 members of the inner circle itself. Each had a commanding and imposing view of those stranded below in the lower circle, who by their lack of a seat above were already deemed to be lower in rank to the inner circle. Only the Emperor could command them, and the Emperor did not petition at the sanctum, but would hold audience in the palace itself. There were faint noises of surprise as Rashan entered ahead of Iridan, with Brannis following in lastly. The assembled sorcerers had not been prepared for their guests to have arrived already.
Markham, what is this? You had not leave to bring them in yet? Markham, called Gravis Archon,
High Sorcerer of the Kadrin Empire, seated directly opposite the entrance, looking down at them. Even seated, it was clear he was a tall man, gaunt, with intense green eyes. His hair was streaked through with gray, but his narrow face was only slightly wrinkled. He appeared to be a man in his late 50s, though really he was more than double that age. Like all the rest of the inner circle, he wore black robes trimmed with red and gold. Neither insignia nor regalia marked him as the leader. When there was no response, and after a somewhat uncomfortable pause, Iridan spoke up.
High Sorcerer, the Herald remained below. He gave no reason, but did not follow on the lifting disc, his voice quiet and meek.
I shall deal with that later, Gravis harrumphed. So, Iridan Corian, you have returned to us safely and reported on troubling goblin activity in the vicinity of Kelvi Forest. Caladrius has passed along the information you have shared with him already.
Gravis nodded in acknowledgement of Caladrius Solaran, seated 3 seats to his left.
We will, of course, be interested in further details, especially on 2 subjects. Firstly, we would like to hear Sir Brannis's account of the events you described. By your own admission, you were incapacitated in battle and did not recover for some days thereafter. Secondly,
the matter of this vagrant you have brought back with you. Caladrius told me of his claim, though there seemed not to be much evidence to support it, Gravis said.
Iridan carefully kept his attention on the High Sorcerer, but something was amiss. He had gone to great lengths detailing the things he had seen Rashan do in their short time traveling with him, and relayed at least the gist of the stories he'd told. Clearly, either Caladrius was withholding information from the High Sorcerer, or Gravis Archon was disdainful of the evidence Iridan had given.
I would not have been troubled had you taken it upon yourself to slay him for his temerity, young Iridan.
Rashan smiled. That certainly would have been entertaining.
Silence! Shouted Gravis. In this chamber you will speak only when answering questions posed by one of the circle.
What is your name, then? Rashan asked innocently. I'm sorry, but I did not even think to inquire as to who is High Sorcerer these days. The High Sorcerer's face flushed.
How dare you? I am Gravis Archon, and I just...
Little Gravis? You grew up to be High Sorcerer. I can scarcely believe it. Rashan laughed a little. Had the wards in the sanctum not prevented nearly any form of magical violence, likely Gravis would have struck him down where he stood.
Guards, remove this vagabond! Place him in one of the warded cells.
Gravis was nearly apoplectic.
If he wants to pretend he's a warlock, let us see him figure a way out of there.
Pretending to be a warlock? Rashan mused. The ill-fitted leathers he wore began to melt and flow. Before the guards could make it up the stairs, Rashan wore a black tunic and loose pants, trimmed in red and gold, not unlike the Inner Circle's garb. However, he'd added a cape as well, with plate-armored epaulets of gold. It was a warlock's traditional uniform. Rashan smiled and cocked his head to the side. Is that better? At that point, the guards made their way in, and the reason for the unique weapons they carried became clear. They dropped the trident heads to either side of Rashan's neck, and the long side tines of the weapons curled around like collars, leaving the short points nearly impaling him. Several of the Inner Circle seemed lost in concentration. Iridan supposed that Rashan's little trick had given them cause to look into the ether. He wondered if in the ether-rich chamber they would be able to notice his lack of a mortal source. Seeing that Rashan emitted no ether might be too much to ask with so much else to see. I would like to speak with Emperor Darris, Rashan stated, unfazed by the weapons that had captured him.
Remove him, Gravis ordered the guards, pointedly ignoring Rashan's request.
While Gravis's attention was elsewhere, Iridan caught Caladrius's gaze. The older sorcerer, Brennus's uncle, who was a stout man, not nearly so tall as most of the Solarans, gave a subtle half-wink, acknowledgement enough for Iridan to know that Gravis was not acting in full knowledge of what he was dealing with. Brennus watched everything transpire and hoped that he would be overlooked. This had gone nearly as badly as he could have imagined without resorting to open warfare, though it remained a possibility. He had seen the aftermath at Tabrik. Whether or not Rashan was truly the ancient warlock returned, as he claimed to be, he was dangerous. Surprising both Brennus and, to a lesser extent, Iridan, Rashan allowed himself to be led from the chamber by the guards. As he was walked down the stairway, his garments faded back to their original shape. Without turning back, he called out,
Third Law of Ether, recite!
A sorcerer must always...
Gravis caught himself mid-sentence. His flush of anger had begun to fade only to be replaced by an even deeper flush of embarrassment. He remained silent until the prisoner was removed entirely from within earshot. None of the Inner Circle knew about his difficulties as a young student at the academy. They did not know how many times he had been kept after class, memorizing the laws of ether and reciting them back to the instructors. They had kept him at it for hours on one occasion, the talented but unfocused son of one of the Inner Circle members of those days. They did not allow him to fail and hammered every lesson into his head, before they would let him go to his supper. They were times he would have preferred to bury somewhere where they would stay buried. As the chamber fell back into a semblance of order, Gravis swept his gaze across the room, surveying the faces of his fellows. To his chagrin, he noted that several were rather amused and took little care to hide it. Two of the members of the inner circle, though, seemed concerned. The outburst had worried them.
"Now that that is resolved, let us..."
Gravis began, but was cut short.
"No, I do not think that was resolved," interjected Dolvain Lurian, one of the ones who had appeared concerned at both Rashan's actions and Gravis's reaction. A powerful sorcerer, despite coming from an undistinguished bloodline, Dolvain was the likely successor to Gravis Arkhan. Hard-faced and hard-eyed, he seemed always to have his brow furrowed in concentration, and had a direct, almost rude manner that put him often at odds with the rest of the circle.
"I know what I saw just then. Who else bothered to look? That was a demon. How would you even tell in here? There is ether upon ether in the sanctum. Can you pick one fish from a school and say it is not moving? Pick out one bird in a flock that is not flying quite right? In here he could easily have been faking," claimed Maruk Solaran, Branis's father.
"The old man is ever the ornery skeptic, but this is the first time I can remember agreeing with him," Branis thought. He kept his thoughts to himself this time, but could not help feeling an unfamiliar swell of pride in his father.
"Faking? You cannot be serious," Dolvain said. "Did you not play at being demons when you were a boy at the academy?" Caladris asked, drawing a scowl from Gravis Arkhan, who would have preferred to be off the topic of the academy entirely. "Draw just as much as you give off, or as close as you can. You look a bit like a demon in the ether sight. Children cannot keep it up long, but I would wager any of us could have managed for as long as that fellow was in here."
"Interesting observation, Caladris," Gravis said. "And I was certainly unimpressed with his transmutation of his clothing. Surely most of us could manage a mentally cast spell in an ether-rich spot such as this, with no distractions about."
"What of his parting barb? A lucky guess? I would surmise not," suggested Stalia Gardaris, her light, high-pitched soprano a stark contrast to the deeper, more hard-edged voices from the male members of the inner circle. She was the second most junior of the 12, with all the look of youth about her, belying her nearly 80 springtimes.
"A fine point. Would that have worked had I said it, Gravis?"
Caladris jested, though his comment was meant also to support Stalia.
"I cannot say I have ever had you sputtering academy drivel before."
"Can demons read minds?" Branis dared to ask, and all eyes momentarily turned downward to where he and Iridan stood, half forgotten.
Branis's natural curiosity had just bested him, and it was too late to suggest best 2 out of 3. Curiosity had drawn blood, and already been awarded the point.
"It is certainly possible in the general sense, but not here. The wards would not allow such a thing,"
Dolvain responded, and to Branis's relief had taken the question seriously.
"But I just realized we are overlooking an obvious source of information. Sir Branis, Iridan, what can you tell us about that person?"
Branis noted that none used Rashan's name. He was hopeful that the skeptical inner circle might yet relieve him of the sinking feeling that Iridan was right about the hermit.
"We found him in Kelvi Forest growing lotus flowers," Branis said. "Or should I say, he found us. As we retreated from our battle with the goblins, we wandered near his dwelling, and he took us in and tended to Iridan. None of us knew how to treat Etherburn, and he did. He traveled with us while Iridan recovered, and afterward for reasons he did not share. When we were ambushed at Tibrik, he destroyed the Megrin soldiers who had occupied it. He went in alone, so we only saw the aftermath. But he was unharmed, and they were..."
Brennus searched for an appropriate and tactful way to describe the horrific sight. Thoroughly dead. I have seen him work magic, but never cast a spell. He also told us a version of the Battle of Dead Earth that does not quite match the histories. In his version, Rashan Solaran walks away from the battle as the only survivor, leaving behind a sword he had named Heaven's Cry. The inner circle looked a little uncomfortably at each other. Brennus was not sure what part had caused the disquiet, or whether it was just the whole thing in general. I must say, though, that I am skeptical of his claims, but have been able to find no definitive proof either way.
Iridan, what have you to add? Asked Gravis,
resuming his place as questioner among the inner circle, and thankful to be on to a different topic. The High Sorcerer relaxed back in his chair a bit.
Well, I am certain that he is indeed a demon. I have observed him enough in the wilds where the ether is easier to read. He neither sleeps nor eats, though he briefly kept up a charade before he revealed his nature to us. His magic comes easily to him. As Brannis said, we never saw him use his magic in any manner but silently. I have no recollection of him using any spell of particular power, just a great number of lesser magics. He also very clearly wiped out the occupiers into brick, but he rushed ahead of us, crossing the chasm before the bridge was down. I saw nothing of how he managed the feat, nor whether it was an exception to his subtle spellcasting, Iridan said, shifting his weight from one foot to the other. The eyes of the Empire's greatest sorcerers pierced him on all sides, and he could not get that thought out of his head as he recounted. His tale of the Battle of the Dead Earth, which he referred to as the Battle of Farron's Plain, differed from what I was taught, but seemed internally consistent.
Well, that's one strike against his claims for certain. There were no survivors of that battle. The investigators that found the battlefield searched thoroughly. No survivors. No one fled. It was a complete annihilation of both sides. The only such incident in recorded history, Stalia said. I might add that it is unlikely that Rashan Solaran would have left behind such a weapon as Heaven's Cry. That dreadful thing was too valuable for him to leave, and too dangerous. He would not have risked who might have taken custody of it.
Agreed, that is true. Marouk said, then nodded in agreement, and much of the inner circle followed suit. For his faults, he was a responsible protector of the Empire. He gave his life to save us all from Lorimar. Let us not forget that, when we complain about the troubles with the enemies he forged for Cadron. Brannis expected as much. His father was always willing to push the family legacy when he had the chance.
I believe him, Iridan said softly. In the echoing sanctum, though, few voices went unheard, and he might as easily have shouted his statement. I cannot quite say why. Aside from all the evidence I have given, I just felt a connection with him. He seems unlike what I would have thought a demon would be like.
Someday you will learn wisdom, young Iridan. You show much promise, Gravis said. But be wary of the easy answer. It may lead you past the harder questions.
Indeed, he shows much promise, Dolvane said. I hear that he is among the strongest of the Fourth Circle, and with his performance on this assignment, I shall sponsor his petition to advance to the Third.
Dolvane was often a champion for the advancement of sorcerers who were not a part of the selectively bred sorceress bloodlines. He felt it served the Empire well to foster new blood, where talent was to be found.
That is neither urgent nor germane, Dolvane. Let us consider the options before us, Gravis said. This creature is either a demon or not. He is either Rashan Solaran or he is not. He claims he is both. What does he gain from each, were he to be lying?
There was a general agreement among the inner circle. Among other traits, Gravis was a scholar and no fool. His leadership of the inner circle was more than just a feat of magical power.
Well, it would seem reasonable to assume he is a demon. I mean, what advantage is there in that lie?
Asked Fenris Destrier,
who had been silent until that point. He spoke little at council, until the more talkative sorcerers had cut to the heart of an argument.
If he means to pass as one, surely he would be found out eventually. Perhaps his plans for the ruse are short-term, and he feels he could maintain the deception long enough to pull it off. He was certainly convincing enough in front of the 12 of us, and we are no peasant farmers to be fooled by cheap tricks, Baruch reasoned.
But to what advantage? If nothing else, we are more suspicious of him now. If he meant to sneak among us, he has failed already, Fenris said. If he wants everyone to believe he is Rashan Solaran, he needs to explain how he is still alive. Being immortal certainly covers that. Brannis could not help but point out what he considered to be the obvious answer, rather than wait for the circle to shake it out via debate. He hoped he was not overstepping his bounds.
Aha! Now that would seem sensible, Gravis said. If we acknowledged him as Rashan Solaran, and thus as Warlock, he would outrank us all. Certainly there must be inherent value in that. Whatever other scheme he may be working, access to everything in the tower and palace, command of the circle and the army. He must have studied up on the Warlock, perhaps having infiltrated the academy, or even House Solaran for details that he could use to make himself convincing. I am practically the only one in the Empire old enough to remember him firsthand, and I was a mere boy. My recollections are poor at best.
It seems you have a rather compelling narrative, Gravis, Stalia said. I feel inclined to agree. This charlatan, whether he is a demon or not, seems intent on gaining power over us. Whether the details of your conjecture bear out, I believe that you have caught this one by the tail.
Pouring a glass from the decanter under his desk, Caladrus added,
Or we are all witnessing a return of the meanest, cruelest warlock the Empire ever knew. One or the other.
There was a long pause where no one spoke, and Caladrus drained his wine glass. More than a handful of his fellows wished they kept spirits hidden away in the sanctum as well at that thought.
Well, enough for now. We all have much to consider. The prisoner will remain sealed in a warded cell until we determine a course of action, Gravis stated,
trying to reclaim the mood of order and efficiency in the sanctum that he preferred.
Sir Brannis, I regret having detained you so long. You surely have a report to give to your commander. You and Iridan are dismissed.
And he waved them away. There was little ceremony among the sorcerers, so Brannis and Iridan merely turned and left the way they came in, unescorted. As the two guards hauled him down the height of the tower and toward the palace dungeons, Rashan fought to control himself. There was one tenet that had kept him alive for over 2 centuries, and he had to convince himself that he was not violating it now, despite the fact that it certainly felt like he was. That tenet was, suffer no enemy to live once they have offered violence. The trident points poised at his neck were no real threat to him, but the guards did not realize that. They were just loyal men of the Empire, following orders that were just and proper. It was he who was playing at games, Rashan reminded himself. He was risking their lives against his own lack of control. As they walked down the corridors that ran beneath the palace, Rashan could envision the walls painted red with their blood, and their bones and flesh in a sloppy pile below. He could easily destroy them with his bare hands, or with a quick blast of lightning, or...
Stop it! He interrupted his own train of thought. This is why I was exiled. Killing is too easy. My solution to too many problems.
He let himself be led the rest of the way to a special section of the dungeons. The guards alerted a third circle sorcerer, whose job it was to help with such matters, that they needed a cell opened in the warded area. There was no proper door where the sorcerer laid his hand, fingers tracing runes in a purposeful order from among the hundreds that adorned the wall. When he finished,
A section of the wall opened, and the sorcerer stepped back quickly. The guards shoved Roshan inside, none too gently, and quickly released the grasp they had around Roshan's neck. A touch to the wall outside of the cell closed it quickly. The room was utterly dark. Neither window nor lamp nor construct of ether was left to the unfortunate prisoner in the warded cell. Roshan was untroubled by the lack of light. He was so accustomed to ether sight that he preferred it anyway, and his ether sight could see plenty well. The walls and ceiling were of basalt, covered in runes that were inlaid with silver. The center of the room was the only spot left bare. It was where the prisoner belonged. The runes were a nasty framework for an ether construct that drew ether out of the room. There was a constant pull even against the prisoner's source, stronger the closer he got to the walls. The only relatively safe spot was the very center of the room, on the floor, for the ceiling bore such runes as well. Tiny holes disguised among the runes allowed in enough air to keep the prisoner alive, but little else. The cell was meant to feel like a water-filled chamber, with just a small pocket of air to breathe. It was a cell for keeping sorcerers helpless. Drawing ether against the rune's pull was nearly pointless. They were too strong and would just draw it back anyway if it was not used immediately. There was no stray ether floating about, so any spells cast would have to draw from the prisoner's own source, a dangerous endeavor. It was devious and possibly a little extreme, but Roshan was proud of it. The Empire had used them for ages, but he had made the most recent modifications. He could still see his own handiwork in the crafting. It was not his best work, he admitted, but it had been such a long time ago. The ether construct upon it had been rebuilt since he had left the Empire. But that was no surprise. Such things wore down over time. How quickly, depending on how well they were formed in the first place. But Roshan's source was sealed against such mild influence as the draw of the runes, and his small demon body used only a fraction of the ether his source produced. He was constantly working small magics just to burn off the excess. He waited an hour or so for things outside to have quieted down, and then proceeded to let himself out of the cell. Roshan's ether snaked through the wall to the same runes the third circle sorcerer had used to open it the first time. The cell tried to draw the ether apart and pull it away from him, but Roshan's control was too finely honed. There was no fraying edge of a spell for the wall's magic to grasp hold of and unravel it by. He smirked as the door opened. The cell would hold just about anyone, from an academy novice to a high sorcerer, or even a warlock, but a demon, especially one who had created it, was too much for it. As he stepped out of the cell, casually touching the wall to close it behind him, he looked up and down the corridor. The dungeon was cheerier than he had remembered it. Whoever had last renewed the lights had not much of a flair for the macabre. Dungeons were not intended to be pleasant places. Half their function was to demoralize prisoners. Roshan reached out and dimmed the lights just a little and reddened them a bit, making it more like torchlight. He felt as if he had arrived home after a long holiday to find out the caretakers of his estate had redecorated in his absence. It was all so familiar, but the trappings had changed. Roshan allowed the tiniest bit of doubt to steal into his heart. Can I have everything back, as if I had never left? He picked a direction and strode down the corridor, heading out of the dungeons. He had a lot to do. As they rode through the city streets, the soldiers' mood lightened. Per Roshan's orders, they were being treated as important guests of the Empire. The guards who had originally expected to be dragging them before their superiors to answer a lot of uncomfortable questions were instead escorting them to one of the oldest and most respected inns in the city. Along the way, they were headed to the market. Jodul had the idea shortly after leaving the city gates that they were on free horses, which had become theirs fair and square through being at the right place at the right time when Rashan killed their previous owners. Thus, they were going to sell them. As they entered the marketplace, even those who had never been to Kadrin found it unusually crowded. The tailors, clothiers, and food stands of all kinds were doing the heaviest business. It did not take them long to realize that they had arrived back to Kadrin just in time for the Bygones Festival. It was the traditional day to dress up as someone you spent most of the cycle of seasons at odds with and get drunk together. The Bygones Festival was held just after the harvest ended. Harvest time mattered little to the urban residents of the capital, but the festival dated back centuries. Back then, and even in modern times in the farmlands, it was a time just after the hardest work of the season had been finished, when tempers were just cooling after a lot of people with differing agendas and needs all just finished their wrangling over prices, transporting goods to market, and other business dealings. It gave everyone a chance to literally see themselves as others saw them, and to diffuse feuds with humor, and drink before everyone was stuck indoors all winter together. Sir Lugrin had taken his leave of them once he was free to do so, parting just after the gates. The rest of them made their way to the market, sold their mounts, and, for the first time in their lives, were considering a proper Bygones Festival celebration. None of the conscripts had a valuable trade or any family wealth, otherwise they would not have been conscripted. So it was a new experience, shopping for costumes. They had horse money filling their pockets. The stalls and carts that clogged the marketplace offered choices aplenty. There were merchants from Shafshan selling black silk that could be made into a fine likeness of the Imperial Circle robes, a popular costume among the army. Traders from Gar Danel sold polished wooden swords that many a sorcerer would wear sheathed on his hip come nightfall. Many professions had traditional rivals, whether through daily conflict throughout the season or throughout a history of excellent salesmanship, leveling a rivalry into place where none seemed quite to fit. The shepherds and fishermen were something of a stretch, for example. For the Bygones Festival, the merchants made sure they had something to sell to practically everyone.
"Figure this fella. Thinks I'm gonna give him 2 lions for this here little rag of a robe,"
Jodul complained to the marketplace in general, turning his back to a man who had tried to sell him a sorcerer costume.
"It's silk. What did you expect?"
Todd retorted, seemingly less interested in shopping than in getting to their fancy accommodations and having a good long rest.
"Just pick out something simple and be done with it." "My wife made mine out of wool, dyed black. Sewed it all herself. Fits me like my own shadow," commented one of the guards escorting them.
Being ordered to treat someone like an honored guest gave them considerable latitude in catering to their requests. An hour or two poking about in the markets with their charges was a better way to spend the afternoon than at their post, so the guards were in no rush to get to the inn.
"Well, I never had a proper costume before, so I wanted something, you know, maybe a bit nice,"
Jodul replied.
"I ain't had this sort of money before. Are you going to get something a little stylish, Todd?" "Probably not. My horse had got bad teeth, they said. Only gave me 3 lions, 5 hocks for the beast. I don't want to dunk it all on a Bygones costume. I did not get 7 lions like you did. Hey, now that reminds me, you still owe me from our dice game," Todd said. "Wow, in all the confusion out there, it had escaped my head entirely. I can't say I even remember how we'd left off,"
Jodul chuckled. He glanced sidelong at Todd to see if he was going to get any leeway with this tactic.
4 lions, 3 hawks,
Todd answered dryly, raising an eyebrow to glare back. Brannis and Iridan went their separate ways, leaving the Tower of Contemplation. Brannis headed for his family's estate on the outskirts of the city, and Iridan to his own rooms, in a boarder's house near the city's western gate. Brannis wanted to change and wash before reporting to his superiors. Iridan just wanted some rest. While Iridan had been attached to Brennus's command for the excursion, he was not part of the army's chain of command, and had only to answer to the circle. If the generals wanted answers from Iridan, they would have to ask Gravis Archon. The roads around the palace were usually busy, but with the upcoming Bygones night party the palace held each autumn, about to begin a few hours hence, there was a heavy flow of people and foodstuffs heading toward the palace as he tried to leave. As Brennus eased his horse through the wagon loads of wine barrels,
carts of fresh fruits,
and various other conveyances filled with delicacies, he was glad of the direction he was headed. In a few short hours, the palace would be filled with revelry and merriment of a sort Brennus wanted no part. As a knight from a respected family, he would have been welcomed at the palace celebration. For most holidays, Brennus was more than happy to accept an invitation to the royal celebrations, but the Bygones Festival was his least favorite time of the cycle of seasons. He loved the colorful displays of magic that lighted the night skies on Founding Day, the elaborate banquets that were served at the summer equinox, and the drunken revels of Promise Day, but the costumed puffery of the Bygones Festival he wanted no part in. Tradition would have him dress as a sorcerer for the night, just as all the sorcerers at the palace would be dressed as knights. Brennus had spent nearly his whole youth pretending he was a sorcerer, and it was a time in his life he was glad to put behind him. As he made his way clear of the worst of the crush of bodies trying to get to the palace, he urged his horse to a trot and made good time through the side streets.
Cadrus was a large city and the seat of government,
with guards and knights and sorcerers in abundance, but still had dangerous areas that decent folk avoided, especially after dark. Brennus did not need to worry about being accosted as he took the shortest route home, through areas where a drunken merchant had a coin flip's chance to make it through with his purse. It was hours yet until sundown, and Brennus was hardly the sort to invite trouble at any hour. Mounted and armored, carrying an ornate sword and wearing the adornments of both the army and House Soloran, no sane criminal would risk impeding him. The ride home was not a long one, less than half the time it would have been had he followed the main roads. He rode onto the grounds of Soloran Estate and took a short gallop over to the stables. Situated on the southern bank of Dragon Lake, so named for the small island that nearly cut it in half running north-south, giving the look of a reptilian iris, the home of one of the most respected families in the empire was extravagant. The main building covered acres and was of construction as fine as the palace, understandable since it was constructed around the same time period by many of the same sorcerers. Towers and parapets rose to heights carefully kept just shorter than those the emperor's home boasted. The grounds were manicured green grasses, with gardens, topiaries, and orchards of exotic fruit trees imported from all over the world. The estate also included stables, a number of outbuildings to house the servants, a boathouse, docks, and fountains. There was also an area of flat black marble that was inscribed with numerous runed circles, glyphs, and other magical devices of general purpose for aiding certain spells. Brennus ignored the commonplace wonders of his familial home. He had been seeing them all his life, and while he was aware of how spectacular the sights were, he was jaded to them. His current goal was a simple one: get cleaned up and report to General Sir Harold Shadrason on the Kelvi mission. He left his horse at the stables and jogged up to the entrance and opened the door. The wards on the door knew him as a member of the Soloran family, so he did not need someone else to allow him entry. It was good enough security that no servant manned the door unless guests were expected. That served Brannis's needs just fine, as he was in a rush and preferred not to get the whole "Welcome home, how was your little adventure?" treatment from some servant who had known him since childhood. And at Brannis's still tender age of 22, there were a fair number who had. For once, Bygones Night was kind to Brennus, as much of the household staff was let off work early to prepare for their own celebrations. The family was nearly all invited to the palace for the evening, so the servants were not needed around the house that night. Brannis made his way up to his room without incident. The room had been kept immaculate in his absence, in a way that it could never be when he was regularly at home. The bed linens were all cleaned and tucked tightly, and there were no clothes or weapons or armor left about. The wardrobe was closed. Brannis never bothered closing it, which meant it was likely filled with his cleaned clothes. Brannis closed the door behind him and began stripping off his road-worn, battle-stained uniform. He struggled some getting out of his armor without help, but with some trouble was able to manage, leaving the discarded plates at the foot of the bed. He tossed Massacre on the bed in its sheath. While it was perfectly acceptable to visit army headquarters armed, even when speaking to a general, most in the army and the knighthood were uncomfortable around that sword. While Brennus was far from the only knight with an enchanted blade, his was a particularly nasty piece of work, and those who knew its powers were leery of being too close to it. He studied the workmanship of the hilt and wondered again why something so fierce was adorned so whimsically. The sculpted dragon made it uncomfortable to wield in his bare hand. The maker obviously had been less concerned about utility than aesthetics when he forged it. Brannis pulled on fresh pants from the wardrobe and made his way bare-chested over to the wash basin. The servants had kept it filled, but the water was tepid. Any other adult in the family would have heated it with ether without a second thought, but with no servant handy to get him hot water for it, Brannis was forced to wash up with cold water. After toweling off, he put on a clean uniform, emblazoned with the Solaran family crest. It had taken some research for Brannis to discover the crest when he had been knighted. Traditionally, sorcerers wore no family coat of arms, so despite their prominence in the Empire, none of the family had known what their centuries-old crest had looked like. Brannis had eventually found a rendering in an old book on the families of the Kadrin Empire and had a seamstress embroider one from the picture to have on his tabard. Suitably attired for polite company, Brannis headed back down to the stables to retrieve a fresh horse and to answer for the loss of his unit. He just hoped Sir Harold was not already dressed for bygones night. Being dressed down by a man in sorcerer's robes was the last thing he needed.